Hey, it's Joe. Today, I am presenting my interview with George Banks, who came recommended to me as a voodoo magic healer. As I did, you will soon discover that Gage has a unique and powerful approach to solving chronic pain that is based on body and mind integration that cracks open the door to flow with a capital F. Like so many of us, I have driven myself relentlessly to be maximally focused on productivity and on overcoming my body and brain's limitations. In doing so, I have stopped functioning as an integrated whole. I have made myself into a fragmented patchwork man. To achieve optimal functionality and to eliminate chronic body aches and pains, I have to relearn to live as one with my body and brain instead of being the puppet master looking out of my eyeballs, pulling this string and that one to make my body obey my wishes. I have to relearn how to perform without thinking and move in a way that my body has evolved and adapted to handle. Ironically, when we try to focus and concentrate all the time, we lose the ability to concentrate intently. What's more, by over-relying on our logical and problem-solving functions and central vision, we lose the ability to see the big picture, to think creatively, to relax, and even the ability to balance on one foot with our eyes closed. I kid you not. The key is to stop fighting ourselves, stop fighting and forcing our various parts of who we are, and instead learning to live as one being in balance, in harmony. Do you wonder if this applies to you as I did? Well, try balancing on one leg with your eyes closed. If you can't do it, you are overly reliant upon your central vision, just as I am today, but not forever. All right, let's talk to Gage Banks. Gage Banks, welcome to the Wise Athletes Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, you come with an unusually strong endorsement. I might even say praise. I've heard that you are a purveyor of voodoo magic healing. That's high praise.
I have gotten that before. It's all physiologically based, but I appreciate my patients kind of seeing that it's amazing how cool the body can really be when you start putting different aspects of it together. And it can appear like voodoo, but really, if it's repeatable, the voodoo part of it's not as accurate as it could be. It just feels like voodoo when you're doing it.
Well, hey, whatever works. Although, since we're talking about trying to help people by talking to them here today, it'll be useful that it doesn't actually require the laying on of hands or the throwing of bones or whatever the voodoo thing would be.
It doesn't, but hands-on is what we specialize in. And so this is going to be a challenge, but it should be fun.
All right. And just to be clear, the Wise Athletes Podcast is for the older athlete. That's me. I'm an older athlete. I am doing this podcast on a search for how to improve my athletic ability now and be healthier now as a foundation to my athletics, but also to allow me to be a strong athlete for a long time. Health span, longevity, all of that good stuff. And so the people listening in here have a similar set of goals is what I would guess. And so the topic that we're going to talk about today is really relevant to us. Anyway, thanks for taking some time.
No problem. And let's just go right into what I want to help with today. And okay. What I want to go into is I want to go into people with chronic pain. I want to go into people with tension in their necks, you know, tension in their backs when they do stuff, this tension that they can treat that sometimes goes away when they lay down, but is still present when they start doing things, tension that's there when they get up from sitting, tension that's there when they get up from computer work. So this podcast is for those people that have had tension. So it's not really for the trauma person, but it might be for the trauma person that hasn't gotten over their trauma yet. Mm-hmm. It might be for that person.
Okay. Well, whatever you can share would be helpful to us. I guess I was thinking before okay. You mentioned what you wanted to achieve. I wonder if maybe it's the same set of things, but if anybody listening here looked in the mirror or they saw a video of themselves while they were walking or sitting or anything, they would notice that they don't really have this like perfect posture or perfect movement in their body. Who doesn't have kind of a head forward thing or walking maybe stiff legged, locked kneed, or who hasn't been wearing stiff,
tight shoes and they, you know, they haven't felt something underneath their feet in so long. They don't know, you know, they fear walking barefoot outside, or the rounded shoulders, or the, you know, oh my, I got one leg longer than the other. You know, my tailor always tells me, you know, yes. These kinds of weird things that I think people have gotten to where they feel like, oh, this is just normal. But I don't think it is normal.
It's definitely not normal. But what I would say is that you actually probably have the perfect posture for something that you do in your life. Huh. You're just keeping that posture when you're doing other things. And so what happens is your posture, you get locked in. You're like a prisoner of an activity that you do that you can't escape because you don't leave the activity that you're doing.
So I'm a prisoner of my sitting at a desk for 8 hours, but then I'm staying in that position when I'm...
You're still sitting at your desk when you're walking around, right? You're still sitting at your desk when you're moving, when you're riding your bike, right? You're still sitting at your desk. I want to talk about integration of the body in a way that I hope will help a lot of people that you might not have really gotten before is also what I'm hoping. But yeah, so the integration of the autonomic system and how the body functions physiologically, the embodiment, how the body recognizes where you are and how you move, and then how the psychology also plays a role in your goals and what you're doing. And if we can get those three things to integrate, we flow and we start moving very functionally. You know, people are always trying to say, what's the best posture I can be in? Well, it's always completely dependent on the activity you're doing. There's no great posture, or there's a billion great postures. You can take your pick, but there's no posture that's not necessary, right? But it's only necessary for a certain portion of your life. But when you stay in that posture too long, what happens is you don't damage your back. You overuse your back. And so you've got carpal tunnel of your back. You don't have this trauma that happened to your back, although because you've overused this muscle, it might lead to trauma. What you've got is a muscle that's telling you, hey, I'm tired. You're asking me to do something I shouldn't be doing. And so when it holds too long, you don't know how to let go of that muscle. And that's usually what those people with chronic tightness of their neck when they're getting up from computer. Their neck is asking, they're asking their shoulders and neck to do something that it's not designed to do that long. They need to change how they're doing it. They need to deregulate or deorient. People are over-oriented in the world and they're too broken apart. They don't have the integration they need.
Awesome. Okay, so let's get into it then. Okay. I think you had a way of talking about this in your mind as we were starting, and then I interrupted you. So why don't I let you go ahead? But let's think of it like a pyramid. What's the tippy top like? What would you say to a person who first came to see you? And then you can get down in more detail into your, like, your framework or your method.
Sure. So people come to see me all the time with aches and tightnesses, right? It's generally, I don't see a lot of post-surgical cases anymore. That's not what I do anymore. I see really complicated cases that have been in discomfort and pain for a long time. And I start to, we start to look at people, and I want to kind of go over real quick. We have embodiment. So we have our body, right? So let me start like this for a second.
Okay.
I have people that have no sense, right? I treat people that have no sense. They're like motocross people, right? Those people have no sense. They don't care if they get a concussion. They don't care if they break a leg.
So no common sense, you mean?
They just have no sense. They want to be moved around. You know, bull riders, they just started wearing helmets a few years ago. They don't have sense, right? They don't care about if they get hurt. They just want to feel their body being pushed. Football players want to be pushed and feel their body being pushed. Athletes, really good athletes, are really, really strongly embodied. And so early in my career, I got all kinds of people that had no sense in that nature. Huh. And then as I got better, I started to treat the opposite extreme, where I got people with too much sense, people that would eat something and get indigestion, right? People that see a bright light and get a headache.
So too sensitive.
Too sensitive. They use their senses too much. They can't go to a loud restaurant because all the noise, they don't have a filter, right? Uh-huh. The bull rider doesn't care if the area is dirty. Right. The bull rider doesn't care if it's loud. The bull rider doesn't care about those things. But the person with too much sense will be completely thrown off with allergies, right? And so the body does this progression. And I think as we get older, you move more to the too much sense, less to the embodiment for a lot of different reasons, injuries being one of them. But then when you get too much sense, you have tension. You no longer have flow. And so what we're going to try to take a journey to is back to flow. And that can be really boiled down to visual fields. And so if I have vision, it comes into two parts, right? So I've got central vision. And remember, I am not an optometrist. I am not talking about clarity. I am not talking about how eyes function or diseases of eyes. But I'm a movement specialist because I'm a physical therapist. And so I'm going to talk about vision in regards to central and peripheral, right? And so when you're in central vision, that's where it's clearest. That's where you have the best vision, right? You can bring things in. You can pinpoint things. It's super important to have central vision. And then obviously we've got peripheral vision, which is the space around us, right? And we need that peripheral vision for context, right? That's our movement should be happening with peripheral flow. And so as we move, our peripheral vision picks up things moving around us. And so it comes at different speeds. Things in the distance move slowly. Things close to us move fast. And we start to get a context of where things are. Our central vision should be scanning the environment, looking for things. So when we decide something, when our psychology decides, hey, we want to go for a walk, right? Then all of a sudden our personality takes over that psychology. And then everything is viewed as something that helps us, something that hurts us, or something that doesn't matter. So you don't pay attention to most stuff centrally, right? But a whole, oh, that's something that'll get in our way. Hey, we better avoid that. And so you walk and your legs automatically avoid it because your peripheral vision got the flow of where you were in the space as you were walking and had context of what was coming towards you, knew where you were, while your central vision's going to the next hole, right? And so that's a flow that happens. That's what movement should be at its best. Central vision, super important for fine motor things, right? The perfect example is, hey, we're threading a needle. If I want to thread a needle, boy, I want everything to lock up, right? I want everything to be still. I want everything to be precise. I want just my fingertips moving. I'm going to bring everything into a tunnel. You know, at that point in time, I'm not going to notice a person walking in the room. At that point in time, I'm not going to see things around me because I am so ingrained into this tunnel and I am working on this. If it gets overdone, it becomes a sympathetic stress of how focused you have to be in that tunnel. And so there's central vision. Central vision locks you up. Peripheral vision flows. And that becomes super important to how you move in the world. Okay, so there's central and peripheral. And I also just want to go over the autonomic system, right? We have fight or flight and we have parasympathetic. And I really truly believe everybody's talking about the vagus nerve, but to me, isolating the vagus nerve is just taking another part, right? We need to have it all flowing together. So as you move, your legs should be integrating with your autonomic system, which should be flowing, allowing you to take a step and fall to the next leg and let go and take a next step and fall to the next leg. And so there's this oscillation that happens, and regulation of the autonomic system happens with oscillation. That's why our hearts beat. That's why our breath has a rhythm to it. our digestion has a rhythm to it. Everything is a wave that relaxes the body. And so as we go for walks, it should relax us until you're locked up, and it doesn't.
I'm not following the importance of this part. I wonder if I'm sitting and so I'm not moving, is the lack of movement stressful?
Well, and so the lack of movement is, well, it's locking you up, okay? And so let's go with people who are locked up, okay?
Okay.
How do you get locked up, right? So remember, if I am narrow, I'm locked up.
If your focus is narrow, right?
Your focus is narrow. Your focus, if you have a really sharp focus, right? You're going to be narrow. You're going to be like you're in a tunnel. Like you're going to be like the world isn't around you. So let's say we have a history, right? Let's say we've got a history of genetics, and those genetic beings never walked on flat surfaces, right? Those genetic beings that we are related to had always had uneven surfaces that they were walking over. Those genetic beings always looked at reflected light, right? All the light that came into them came off of something else and came into their eyes. Mm-hmm. And now here we are, not that being anymore. We're sitting in front of a computer. And not only are we not looking at reflected light, but we're looking at projected light right into the middle of our central vision when we're looking at a computer. All of a sudden, those receptors in the central vision are like, oh yeah, look at this. We've got all this light filling our beings. Let's get some blood flow. And we really get that central vision really working hard. Okay. And so that central vision comes in, and then everything around that computer is dull. Everything around that computer is not sharp. It's all reflected light. And so this projected light gets beamed into us, and we start to get into that tunnel of where we are. Okay. And that tunnel brings our head forward, because our eyes need to bring everything together, right? That tunnel actually keeps us locked in over most of the time on our right side. And I'm going to go into that in just a second. Mm-hmm. But that whole position keeps us there. Our head goes forward. Our arms go forward. Everything goes forward. And so everything converges. Our bodies converged. And when people come to me with bad posture, most of the time what they're saying is they've converged. Their head and shoulders have come forward. Their body's gone backwards. They've rounded. And if you want to deconverge, you have to decentralize. And not only that, it's really interesting how the brain works, because we're looking at a two-dimensional object, right? And the left brain is way better at a two-dimensional object. So it actually gets us more to focus on our right sitting bones. It gets us to focus, for a lot of different reasons, more on our right oral functioning, more on our right eye, more on our right nostril. All those things come into play, and we get locked up onto one side in a non-three-dimensional world, and then we try to go walk around like that.
So we get out of balance by being too much of our time is focus time. We get out of balance, even just one side of my body to the other side of my body.
Yeah. And so that's really where you get locked up. So in your body, the gravity of your body likes to take you to the right side. So we've got this liver that's over on the right side. It weighs more. It takes you over there. We've got this diaphragm that's bigger on the right side, because there's an extra lobe of lung on the right side. Every breath you take pulls you a little bit to the right. We've got this brain that's oral function or verbal function is on the left side. So it wants to look into the right visual field. And so everything we do, our psychology, our physiology, and our embodiment all takes us to the right side. And that locks us up. And again, we're getting more narrow. We're getting more concise. We're getting more narrow. We have to diverge. We have to get bigger. We have to expand our world if we want to help our tension that's overused.
Am I understanding that it's not just the fact that I have to work for a living and that involves sitting in front of a computer that has gotten me out of balance? It's the fact that I'm out of balance. I want to do more focused stuff now. That's what I'm designed to do. And so I want to do that, and I do that more, and I get more out of balance over time.
You got it. And it's okay to be 70-30. It's just not okay to be 90-10. It's when we get so far out of balance that we can't find balance that we run into issues, right? You're an out of balance machine. You are not symmetrical by design. So people that try to get, like I had this person tell me, I'm going to this great thing. It was in Southern California where they're really trying to make me symmetrical. And this person was a really good tennis player. And he was telling me about the symmetricalness of how, well, my left side needs to work like my right side. And I was thinking, well, all the studies on tennis players show that they have bigger arm girth on their right side, on their dominant side. So I'm just going to say they're a right-handed tennis player. But right. Not only that, but the bone grows thicker on that side. Not only that, but the bone goes longer on that side. Oh. And so if we were to give you symmetry, would that be creating more asymmetry? It's a real question that you got to ask. Asymmetry is not the answer, but being able to transfer and move in a divergent way is the answer to less tension if your tension is reoccurring.
It's interesting. I don't want to jump ahead and wreck the flow here, but
no
I do want to say that my mind is leaping ahead anyway.
Go for
and
it.
It is to say, oh gosh, you know, maybe this is why they say sitting is the new smoking. So you shouldn't sit for more than 30 minutes, or, well, you know, why meditation or breathing exercises where you're not focused on something is so good for you. Or maybe these things are good in themselves, but maybe the main thing that they do is they get you out of the focus that you are so great at, that you really want, that gives you so much pleasure and is pulling you out of balance.
I think there is something to that, right? So giving yourself a break from focus is a huge thing, but we need to re-add integration of yourself and the world, because when you're looking at a screen, there's no you. And that's another weird thing, is that you're looking at a screen. You don't have to relate yourself to that screen. When you're walking, you're moving in a world. And so you have to be the one that's avoiding the hole, right? You have to be the one, and when you're driving your car, that's not hitting the car next to you, right? There has to be a reintegration of you. And so somebody was asking, I had a patient who's got Parkinson's the other day, who they stated, he had no relationship to anything else. Like everything he did, I go, when you move forward in reference to you, what happens to this chair over here? And he goes, well, the chair stays there. I go, no, in reference to you. He goes, well, the chair stays there. I hadn't realized yet that he had no reference for himself. And then his wife said, well, so he needs to reference himself, so he should do meditation. I said, he needs to walk and notice himself so he can put himself in a body, so he can help himself to do meditation with. Like, there's just one more step that needs to be there that we're going to get to in what you're saying. But we need to reintegrate ourselves in the world so that we can flow in the world. And so let's go real quick to talking about somebody and what it would look like to be over-centralized, that I think everybody will understand. Over-centralized, a normal human being, when would be a good example of when they were over-centralized?
All right.
Right? So picture, I spent 12 years in New Orleans. And then a group called the Institute of Physical Art invited me out to Steamboat for a year, where I did a couple fellowships out there.
Good skiing.
Yeah, it's amazing skiing, amazing town. But the thing is, they say it's not if you're going to fall in Steamboat during the winter, it's when are you going to fall in Steamboat during the winter, okay? And so I would have considered myself a good athlete, but and one more thing, I'm blessed with a one-year-old daughter who's just learning to walk, right? And so when she walks right now, as she's learning, she makes fists and puts them right next to her shoulders and bends her elbows and really extends her back. And it's a great example of locking up, right? You can watch those arms being pulled in and her tightening everything while she walks. And I remember thinking, oh, that's just the way somebody looks when they come on ice. Okay. All of a sudden, you can't trust your legs. And so what do? You have to lock up your body. You have to extend your back. You have to hold everything tight because you don't have the integration of legs. As soon as you step on ice, you have to use your eyes and your vestibular system so hard when you walk on ice to try to balance you. When you start to slip, your head moves all over the place. And that's a good example of somebody who's overly centrally regulated. And my problem is I'm in Monterey, California, where there's no ice, but I get people that look like they're walking on ice all the time, right? Their neck is forward. Their back is extended. Their chest is up. They're breathing through their neck. When you see those front muscles that are so tight on the bottom of their neck, they're breathing and lifting up their chest every breath. They can't expand. They have no idea what it's like to expand. They're walking on ice. And that's a pretty, like, people can picture that, right? You can picture that person
on
ice.
Stiff.
They're stiff. They're holding themselves too hard, right? When somebody is really good on ice, like let's say they're a speed skater, they use the ice. They let go of their back. They actually round their back in most cases. They flex. They glide as they press, and they lift, and they let themselves fall. They let go of one limb and fall onto the other limb. And so they have a flow, right? They have this flow that happens, this beautiful movement that happens over ice. But if you put my buddies from Louisiana who've never seen an ice rink, much less been on ice, they're going to grip up almost immediately. And so that's an example of somebody who's over centrally utilizing their vision for balance because they can't trust their body.
This feels important. I'm going to shut up and let you keep going, but I want to come back to the, what do you do about this?
I absolutely, we need to come back to what we do about it, right? And this is important. And it's amazing how much physiological processing will tighten you up, right? And if you're tightened up all the time, this is what I'm saying. It's like another, like, we talk about regional interdependence in all the physical therapy places I've been. And so what that means is that, let's say you've got a hurt hip, but you find out the person's ankle doesn't bend very well. Well, that ankle not bending is making their hip do more work. And unless we get that ankle to move, then we're going to have trouble with that hip doing too much, not what it's supposed to do. And what I'm saying is it doesn't just stop at the body. It goes all the way through the physiological processes of vision, breathing. It goes through everything because the body is the most amazingly integrated machine that there ever has been. Another example of this would be if you want to see somebody that can't turn their rib cage, right? So early in my career, I was an orthopedic structuralist, right? I wanted to see everything as a structure. But if you want to see somebody that can't turn their rib cage, look at somebody that has hepatitis. When they get hepatitis, their liver swells. And so all of a sudden, they might have trouble breathing because the liver is one of the things that holds the diaphragm in its domed shape. And all of a sudden, you don't know that that rib cage has to turn around that liver, that that rib cage uses that liver as almost a fulcrum to spin around. And so all of a sudden, they can start losing motion of their rib cage. And you don't really think of the liver as being an orthopedic problem. but it definitely turns into one.
It's this integration thing you're illustrating here.
Yes, it happens everywhere, right? Every part of your body is reliant in so many more ways than you can think. And so right now, the medical world is trying to take every part of the body out and put it in a little box that doesn't affect every other part, when it just doesn't work.
Yeah, I've encountered this in every podcast that I have done. Is you try to simplify things too much, you then get into where you have a model that sort of holds together logically all on its own, but it doesn't actually work anymore to model what it's trying to model because it's in isolated. It's been isolated. Yes. I wanted to go back a second and just say that it finally occurred to me what you were saying, and this was an important point for me anyway, so maybe for others, that this business of being tight, of being overly focused. And then you were talking about ice, and it sort of tricked me into thinking about fear, right? I'm afraid of falling, and so I get tightened. And that was the problem. And the skater, the person who's comfortable on ice, is loose because they you know, their brain-body connection is good. They've got experience with this. They know how to handle it. But I think the bigger point is not about fear. It's about how over time we've gotten trained to where we are good at and like being focused. We think that's the right way to be. That's how a good human being is. And that leads to problems. And so we have to unlearn the lesson that this is the way to be a successful, healthy human being, and to realize that that is getting you into trouble. That there is a time for that. When the tiger comes for you, you should focus on that. But you shouldn't do that all the time or as much as possible and then relax, you know, a few hours a day because somebody told you to meditate.
Well, and so I'm not sure exactly how to put this, but let's go back to that, because what you just said was so important, okay? And so fear, I'm not saying that people aren't afraid. I'm saying they are afraid, and I'm going to tell you why, okay? So when you're centrally focused, it is like you're stimulating a fear response, okay? It is like you're starting to run. We went over earlier how when people are centrally focused, what they start to do is breathe from their neck. They start to lift up their chest, right? When they're standing on ice, they can't expand. And so they lift up their chest when they breathe. That is you moving too fast. That is a stimulation of the sympathetic fight or flight system. It absolutely is. When you're over-focused, you're looking for threats, right? It absolutely is. And I'll tell you something interesting. I do this test with people, and it's a really easy test to do. Anybody could try it at home, right? And so what I do is I hold somebody sitting in front of me, and I test this to see if they're overly centrally regulated. I put a pin, just a regular writing pin, in front of their about eye level, and I have them grab it with their hand. No problem. Then I keep it at or just a little above eye level. And then I say, okay, now close your eyes and grab it. And all of a sudden they can't. They miss it.
Even though you haven't moved it, they still...
I moved it a couple inches, right? I don't move it far. I just move it a couple inches, right? Okay. I do move it a little bit, right? So they have to reorient, because this is all about orientation and disorientation. And so when they grab it again, they miss it. And if you miss it, what that tells you is that your spatial embodiment and spatial reasoning is off. What this person will say is that, yeah, I go hiking. My balance is great. I go hiking all the time. I'm really careful. I watch my feet when I step over any of the roots that are underneath. I really am careful to not step in any holes. Well, if you're really careful, that's not the way you used to walk. Right? The way you used to walk was, you used to see it. You were stepping over it when you were looking for the three impediments down, right? Those people that really need to, that look down when they're going upstairs, right? All of a sudden they start looking at things because they're fearful they're going to fall, because their body is not where they think it is. That's the problem.
Okay. So even if they don't feel like it's fear, it is a fear.
It is, absolutely. And so they have to be more careful. Anytime somebody tells that to me, I'm really careful when I immediately know, okay, here we go. So we've got some overactive regulation going on in your brain that's protecting you. Okay. There's not enough flow going on. And so, yeah, that's one of the big things. When they start saying they've got tension, you start to recognize that, right? Another couple tests, just because now we're here and I want to give people some ideas on what to look for, right? I have them stick out their tongue. If their tongue deviates.
Like one side or the other?
Yeah, if it goes left or right. And some people's tongues have little marks around the outside from where teeth are. Well, that's a sure sign that their tongue is pressing forward on their jaw and that their jaw is dysfunctional, okay, that they're not working right. The other really big signs for me are that when they walk, they have got a significant forward head, and when they walk, they don't swing their arms. You know, if you don't swing your arms when you walk, then I know that you are tightening your neck, because the only way for your head to stay back is if for one of your arms to go forward and one of your arms to go back. As soon as you bring both arms forward or no arm goes back, your head has to go forward to compensate for that. And nothing you can do can change that, because you couldn't move if your head didn't go forward.
Without falling over?
Without falling over. Yeah, your head is protecting you, keeping your center of mass forward.
And a stable head seems like would be important for good vision.
You know, you would think so. But what people do with central vision is they make their vision their only thing. So if I ask somebody with overly central vision to stand on one leg, okay, what they do is before they stand on one leg, they look at something focused really hard, and then they lift the leg. And then to hold their vision, if somebody's really well embodied, only their leg will move. You'll see their head will just wobble underneath there, but only their leg will really be moving. If somebody's really overly central vision, they'll be looking hard. They won't be able to look around. And what they'll do is they'll have to move their head a little bit to just give stimulus to their visual and vestibular systems. But they'll be all doing it through their head. They won't be doing it through their leg.
The reason for them doing this is because they use their vision for their balance?
Yeah, picture if I had you stand on one leg, but I put a chair in front of you, okay? And I put your hand on the chair. Then you could use the chair to move you, right? Because you'd have something fixed. Well, that's what you're doing with your vision. Your body is being moved by your eyes at that point in time. Your eyes are on a fixed target and your body's sensing that movement, and it is countering that movement of your eyes. It's not feeling the movement of your body or your leg. It's countering the movement of your eyes. And so when people walk that are over central, what they do is their eyes stay perfectly still. There's no shifting of their body. There's no rotation going through their body, but they're holding their eyes super still so that they can be as careful as they can be.
So this is not good for flow.
This is, you got it. So now we're back to flow, right? We need to decentralize somehow. We need to change things. We need to get out of that overly central flow, and we need to add you back to the equation.
Yeah.
And so if we could do those things, then all of a sudden, then you could start to re-peripheralize, which would allow you to have greater scope. Be able to do different complex things, not focused things, right? See things divergently, see things on more as they are versus, so when people are centrally visioned, it's like they're looking at the world through a tunnel. And picture, like I went to this nerve tour, this great gentleman named Gil, and he said, picture trying to see the Big Dipper with 3 foot tubes on each eye. You could never see the Dipper, right? Because you don't get the whole picture. All you get's a part of the picture ever. And you could never put the picture together in that regard.
All right. So the bigger, stepping back for a second, just in the interest of time here, stepping back for a second, what we have talked about mostly was you getting me to understand this notion of people being overly focused, which makes them fearful and stiff and impedes their ability to have flow, and they have a reduced sense of self in their environment.
You got it. And reduced body.
And they're stressed and they can't relax. And I had tried to stick on there, and I still kind of think it's important, but anyway, you tell me, that they have learned that this is the way to behave, that this is how they succeeded at work, by focusing really hard and not chit-chatting and walking around and but working on their computer and getting their things done. And so focus means productivity. Productivity means success. That's happiness. That's goodness.
That is very accurate, right? The whole world is designed to break things into finer parts and then take those finer parts and look at them again, right? But it's it's kind of like McGilchrist, I think was his name. We used to say, it's like this, okay? This is like the musician who comes to a difficult part of the piece, takes the difficult part out and practices it, but never brings it back to the piece, right? They're so focused that they miss the big picture, right? They don't put it back in the song, right? They have just part of it that they're taking out of the song, but they're not looking at the entire thing put together. And so that's where the flow starts to come in. Now we start to integrate all the parts put together, and that's when the body starts to find a rhythm and starts to relax and starts to regulate its autonomic nervous system. And so this is the way you can start to regulate your autonomic nervous system. And I've got just a couple things that I think are pretty easy that help people to understand it and help people to start to gain flow again in their lives and put themselves back in.
Great.
Okay. And so the first thing I would say, and this is especially true for people with tightness in their low back, right? Generally, well, and a lot of times what will happen is people will sit for a long time and then they'll stand up and they'll have pain when they stand up. Well, one of the things that they're doing is when they stand up, their head's going forward and their back's extending. And so they're using the tightness that just held them up the whole time, and they're trying to stand up. They're not feeling their body. They're feeling the tension of their neck. And so a simple rule to standing up and feel your body is to look at your heels while you stand up. I can't tell you how different standing up is if you simply do this thing.
Look at your heels. I can't visualize that.
So as you're standing up, before you stand up, look at your heels.
So I'm in my chair and I'm about to stand up. I should look down at my heels.
Look at your heels and keep looking at your heels the whole time you stand up.
Okay, and that does what?
That moves your center of mass so far forward that your feet start to function.
That
moves your center of mass so far forward that you're not back extending. Most of the time when people stand up, they have to use extension and momentum to get up. If you look at your heels, all of a sudden your legs start to push the floor away from you. That's what your body perceives. And as soon as that floor is being pushed away from you from your legs, all of a sudden you've got a moment where you're embodied. All of a sudden you've got a moment where your back doesn't have to tighten. All of a sudden you've got a moment where your neck doesn't have to thrust and come back while you stand up.
All right. Look at my heels before I stand up. That's number one.
Yep. If you can, look at the legs of your chair. Get a little bit further back. Like, look back. I tell people, sometimes I have to tell people, okay, I want you to look, like pretend I hung a picture under your chair. And you're going to look at that picture. And then to sit down, it's the same way. Look at your heels and then bend your knees. People that have too much back will come down with a plop. They'll like get to this place and then they'll plop into a chair, right? Because there's this emptiness where their back can't flex anymore. And they're in this no man's land where they can't control it with their back anymore. But if you look at your heels or look at the chair's legs as you're bending your knees to sit down, you'll come down really easy. It's a funny thing, but this is especially important for people on the toilet. That's a little bit lower seat in a lot of cases. It makes a huge difference for those type of people. But anybody having tension in their back, give it a try. See if it helps. Generally, it does. I've had more people thank me for that solution than any other exercise I've ever given.
Awesome. All right. What else?
And so the next thing is, unfortunately, I'm going to tell you, you have to go for a walk. Okay. The body is just designed to walk.
Okay.
Okay. There's just no part about it that's not built to walk. Okay. When you walk, it's different than biking. Your heart rate goes up faster. It's more efficient. I mean, everything about you is really built to walk. And that rhythm that occurs with the weight shift and walking is vital to giving yourself a rhythm. And so when you first start walking, just notice what you're doing. A lot of people will be looking at the ground. A lot of people will be focused on an object or focused on something when you walk. So first, you're just noticing that. But then you're going to pick a target in the distance. And while you walk, you're just going to start noticing the periphery.
So let me understand that. I'm looking far away, but I'm trying to make sense of the things that are around me in my peripheral vision.
Yeah, you're noticing things in your peripheral vision. Don't look at them, right? Those over-central people keep trying to glance their eyes over at them when they see. No, don't look at them, right? You're just noticing, and notice how things are relating to what you're doing, like they're moving past you.
Okay.
Notice you go forward, they go backwards, okay? And it's especially important on the left side for a lot of different reasons. We've touched on some of them, but it's really important that you start to notice the periphery on the left side.
All right.
Okay? And then the last thing, as you're walking and you started to notice the periphery, the last thing you're going to do is you're going to swing your arms. And you've got to actually swing an arm back to swing an arm forward. But the thing you're going to do is you're going to manifest an arm in your peripheral vision for once in your life. You're going to be looking at something, but not looking at it. And you're going to notice your arm coming up into your peripheral visual field and then going away. And that's how you're going to reconstitute yourself in relationship with the world. Your brain's going to start to go, oh, that's me. Oh, look at me, I'm right here. As my arm goes forward, the world goes backwards. It's going to start to re-put you in the world that you're viewing going past you. And that's going to help to reconstitute you and reestablish your non-central dominance and allow you to move in the world more freely.
So if I don't see my arms in my peripheral vision, I need to move them more until I see them. So it might even be an exaggeration swinging.
It is absolutely going to be. And really, it's the rib cage moving forward and back. It's not the arms, but that's another day. If I could get the rib cage to turn, my arm will go further forward.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so the rib cage should turn. I don't want people just swinging their arms, although it'll help, right? If you just swing your arms, it'll help. But really, you want an arm to go forward and an arm to go backwards. If I need my head to stay centered, an arm has to go backwards, right? If I don't have an arm going backwards and my arm goes forward, my head has to go forwards to make up for that, right? And so it's not just about forward coming into my vision. It's also the other arms going backwards behind me. And it is going to be over-exaggerated for a little bit, but you'll start to be able to get a rhythm. And you should be able to do that without any exaggeration. A really good walk, people will be able to notice their arms swinging forward and backwards. People will even notice their legs coming into visual processing forwards and backwards. And that's how they start to reestablish themselves. Who am I? Where am I in the world that they're moving through?
Okay.
What happens is when you're typing, both arms are going forward, so the head has to go forward. Mm-hmm. You don't have any way of getting out of that. And that's why when you walk and one arm doesn't go back and both arms are going forward when you walk, your head is going forward. And it doesn't matter if you put your head back, you can't move back there.
Right.
That's not where you can go.
But if I'm on a computer for, you know, 8 hours and my arms are forward and my neck is forward, how is walking for an hour going to offset 8 hours?
Well, so you had to understand what it was like for one shoulder to go forward. But of course, once you figure that out, then it's amazing what'll happen is if when you reach a arm forward to grab a mouse, the other arm goes back, how different that is in your neck. And so the thing that people are missing when they're working on a computer is nothing ever goes back. And it's not even the arm that has to go back. It's the rib cage that has to go back. The arm can still type. The arm can still reach forward. But if one shoulder goes forward when you reach that mouse and the other shoulder goes back, your head stayed centric. And you can start to put that together. When you sit for a little while, every once in a while, put like your water way up on a high shelf so that you have to reach one arm really high to get it and the other arm stays back. And so you start creating environments where you have to reach and stretch so that your head is pushed back as your arm goes forward. And that's how you start to get your head back. Because you're right, there's no way if you're standing on a computer for 6 to 8 hours a day that you cannot move your head forward if you don't change something about what you're doing.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, these sound like good tips. I think maybe I've combined them into two, but one was look at the heels before standing or sitting, and then...
And keep looking at it while you're transitioning. Okay. Right. Keep looking at your heels until you've stood all the way up.
While moving.
Yes.
Okay. And then the other one, I think you said walking and then you went into the swing your arms, peripheral vision thing.
We did three steps to walking. Yeah. Okay. The first step is you're walking and you're just noticing what you notice. Okay. So that's you setting yourself up to just be where you are, right? And just notice what you notice. Then you're going to start looking in the distance and noticing the periphery. So that's the second stage, right? So you're walking, you're moving, and as you're moving, your eyes are looking in the distance, but noticing the periphery. So you're decreasing your central focus, even though your eyes are still going in one direction, but you're looking, you're noticing how things pass you. And then the third step is you start to swing your arms, bringing them into your peripheral vision as you walk so that you can establish where you are in that flow of activity.
Got it. Okay. And so these things involve balance. They involve vision. They involve the
integration
because we're, you know, walking. And bringing all of that together, integration.
And divergence, right? And alternation and the waveform of switching. So when you don't swing your arms, you don't have to move your center of mass. You stay put, right? When you start swinging your arms, each leg gets fully vested in that gait cycle, right? We're trying to re-give you a rhythm of the walk so that you can have a rhythm when you move, right? That's the flow. You are taking it away when you're working so hard at a computer. There's no rhythm that's happening there. And so you lose rhythm. You lose your ability to alternate. And balance always comes through alternation.
Okay. And the one thing that these three walking types and then the looking at your heels thing don't seem to address is the tongue, the mouth. Is there something we should be doing with that while we're doing these, or is that just an advanced intervention?
If we're going to do anything with those, what we'd really want is if you establish a rhythm, let go, right? The first thing that really actually needs to happen is it's not something you can add. It's something you have to let go of. And so you have to let go of your jaw. The best explanation I've ever seen, heard of it is there's this new skyscraper in New York called the Skinny Skyscraper. and they couldn't build them for a long time. The engineering wasn't there because when the wind would hit them, they would sway. But what they did was they suspended like a 7-ton ball in the top. And so now as the wind hits it, the ball just eats up the energy of that wind and keeps it right on track. That's what your jaw is. As you move, your jaw counter moves, keeping your head on track. But people who are centrally locked up tighten their jaw. Their teeth touch.
Okay, so don't clench your teeth, you're saying.
Yeah, I'm saying you got to let go of that jaw. And not only do you not clench your teeth, you've got to let it flow. You've got to let it move from side to side. It's actually doing the same thing that your arms are doing. You've got to let go. And so you've got to untighten, right? That's what you're trying to do. Once you've started to get a rhythm, then see what you can let go of. See what you don't need. See what lets you have more of that rhythm. There's nothing you can add on of what you're doing to give you more rhythm. It's all of a sudden about taking away things.
All right. You know, look for where you have tension and see if you can let the tension go.
You got it. That's exactly right. And as you start doing that, your head will start going back to where it needs to be. It's amazing how forward head posture, people are trying to bring back their head and that doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so Mr. Physical Therapist, I thought we were going to be talking about pain and solving pain. And maybe this is a path to that, but I think that this is more fundamental. This is maybe more just like how to be a normal functioning human being who is happy. And you might end up with less pain as a result. What would you say?
I would say that over-reliance and over-orientation is causing, just like we said at the beginning, you to overuse muscles for activities that they're not designed to do. So your tension that you get, that chronic pain that you get, is not a muscle necessarily being broken. It could be a muscle that's doing too much and doing more than it's designed to do. And until you can take away the need for that muscle to do what it's doing, you're going to have that reoccurring tension and pain. And so this is fundamental to get your autonomic and embodiment synchronized if you're going to get rid of chronic pain.
Okay, but there's more to be gained.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot more to be gained. There's tons to be gained. So you'll be able to think, you'll be able to see things in a bigger picture. If you can do it, of course, there's more to be gained. But it is fundamental to tension and pain as well, is what I'm saying.
Got it. Okay, good. This was very interesting to me. I wasn't ready for it. So I have to keep thinking about this. It feels like there is really something important here. So I'm going to have to try these things that you've said and just keep thinking about this.
And I'm happy to revisit and go back to oral, facial, and airway as much as you want to. We can get so deep in those weeds. It's unbelievable. What I was thinking today was just keep it a little bit more simple, a little bit on peripheral versus central.
Yeah.
But absolutely, all those other things are vital to the functioning of how you move.
Don't take me wrong. I'm not criticizing. Mm-hmm. I'm appreciating that you cracked open a door for me that I didn't know existed. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't looking to go in that door because I didn't know it was there.
That's what I was hoping.
This is giving me kind of like another perspective on things that I have heard about before. I mentioned before we hit record that I'd heard people talk about balance and vision and even tongue position and things like that. But, you know, they didn't talk about over-focus. And it's not that you should never do that. It's just that you shouldn't do that all the time.
Right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Your right. posture is good when you're doing what you're supposed to do with that posture. Your posture is not good when you're trying to walk around with that sitting at the computer posture.
Yeah. Well, so I tell you what, let's wrap this one up. I want to leave the audience with how they can find you and more information about what you're talking about online. And then I'm going to have to think on this some more, and I'm going to reach back out to you about part two.
I appreciate that. Like I said, I'm Gage Banks. I own a small physical therapy clinic in Monterey, California with my wife, Laura, who's an awesome physical therapist as well. It's Connect. I wouldn't have spelled it like I did if I had known I'd had a website with it, but it's K-I-N-E-C-T, right? Connect Physical Therapy is where we can be reached. And I hope this was helpful to people. And it's about integration. That's what our practice, it's one of the fundamental, we have four pillars, and that's one of the fundamental pillars of our practice is integration. You just can't stop at physiology or yeah. the body or orthopedics, right? It's all.
Right. Okay, well, this, as I said, has been really amazing to me. So thanks for that. I'll get the website in the show notes so people don't have to remember how to spell it.
Okay.
I guess you were being clever with kinetics and the word connect.
I have a kinesiology degree too, right? And so it was connect. But like I said, I'm not sure I would have picked that now.
It's a cool name. So, but since they don't have to spell it, they could just click the link in the show notes.
Please do. Yep.
Then they can find you.
Okay.
All right, Gage. Hey, buddy. Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it too. You guys have a great afternoon.
Yep. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining my talk with Gage Banks. You can find more information about Gage in the show notes.